As he said, my name is Nicole Newlist. I'm otherwise known as Rogue Clown. I think there are more people here who know me as Rogue Clown. Hey, Blue, what I answer to just about anything. Know me as that than Nicole, but like I said, anything's good. And I'm here to talk a little bit about open source tools for musical exploration and composition. First, a few words about me. And yes, that is a picture of me singing karaoke at a bar in Chicago a little while ago. I'm pretty good at singing. I mean, I've been singing in choirs and since I was, started in my first choir when I was 9 years old, fifth grade. And I mean, I'm still doing it now. And I'm interested in composing music. You know, I started with like little piano things when I was taking piano class for those 6 months when I was 9 or 10. And, you know, I've done a little composing here and there, taken a bunch of music theory classes. I'm pretty good with computers, but I'm really bad at operating musical instruments. And if it's something that I can't sing, or if it's more than one line at once, you know, it's kind of hard for me to be like, hey, everyone, come out here, you know, sight read this stuff. I want to figure out what this is saying. I want to figure out, you know, how my compositions, how my ideas sound when they're realized, what the harmonies I'm setting them up for. And since I can't really play them on a keyboard very well, given my complete lack of finger dexterity, what can I do? I can use a computer. Now, a few words about what this talk is. It's a practical survey of available open source options for musical projects. I'm going to go over things that are useful for editing existing compositions, you know, be it things you've written in the past or things other people have written that you want to, you know, remix, sample, reprocess, just generally mess around with, and things that are useful for creating your own compositions. I mean, honestly, they're just given the nature of using computer tools, there's a lot of overlap. You know, the program doesn't know the difference between a file that somebody else's and a file that's yours, you know, putting aside ridiculous DRM stuff, because hey, we're talking about free software here, that's a little beyond the scope. I want this to be accessible for beginners. I don't plan to get stuck in any kind of jargon, but if I do get stuck in any kind of jargon or I'm saying some words that you don't quite understand, please, in the middle of my talk, raise your hand, just start yelling at me. I really don't care. You know, the point is not that I go through for the next 50 minutes without any interruption. The point is that you understand what's going on and that you leave here with some sort of an idea of how to use some of these tools to start messing around with computer music. I also hope that some of these tools are ones that if you have played around with computer music before, but either haven't used free software yet or have, but have only used a certain limited amount of tools, maybe you'll leave here with a couple more things in your arsenal. And also, quite importantly, it's all free software, but it's also cross-platform. You know, a lot of people associate free software with Linux. And yeah, there's free software Linux that is a pretty big community, but most of the software that I'm talking about today runs on more platforms than just Linux. You know, my own background is Linux, but most of the stuff runs on Mac or Windows or both. Now a few words about what you're not going to get out of this talk. It's not an exhaustive manual for any piece of open source software. I'm not going to touch on every single capability of every single piece of software because, my goodness, if I came up here, I could probably, you know, there's probably more than an hour of material on, you know, just Arter or just QSynth or anything like that. I can't go into every single detail of every single piece of software. It's not a class on music theory or a class on musical composition techniques. It's the stuff I'd be perfectly happy to talk to you with, you know, off to the side, either after my talk or, you know, after a few drinks at one of the parties. But it's a little beyond the scope of what I'm getting at here. So, kind of the topics that I'm planning on covering. First, I want to say a few words about why open source, why I got started doing musical composition with open source software, and why it's a good idea for people who want to experiment with stuff to use open source software for computer music. Then I'm going to talk about the building blocks of computer music, just the general categories of programs that can be used. Then I'm going to talk about making sounds with software synthesizers. The focus is going to be on software and not hardware because, well, this is a talk about open source software. I'll talk a little bit about how hardware fits into it. There are, you know, hardware synthesizers, hardware sequencers, those kinds of things that exist, and you can probably solder your own together over in the Hackerspaces room. But again, that's a little beyond the scope of what I'm getting at. Then I'm going to talk about creating musical structures using sequencers, score frameworks, algorithmic composition frameworks, things to actually, you know, make those notes, those sounds that the synthesizers will make into pieces of music. Then I'm going to talk about what's available to connect to those building blocks. I'm going to talk then about some, you know, audio processing software if you already have something that's tracked, you know, or a WAV file or a MIDI file, something like that, some programs you can use to mess around with that. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about Ubuntu Studio, which is a Linux distribution that is focused on multimedia work. And, you know, will help you put some of this into practice if you just want to tinker around with it. First, why open source music software? I got started because I got into computer music after I started using Linux. I mean, even though I've been singing for years and years and years, I really didn't get started playing around with a lot of computer music until the last few years. Linux has been my only desktop OS, my only OS that I keep at home, except for, you know, that Windows virtual machine just in case I go to some website that doesn't work in anything but Internet Explorer. Boo hiss, gonna end that rant here. Linux is my only desktop OS. So how did I find software to use when I wanted to, you know, learn my choir part or something like that? I Googled, you know, score framework Linux, blah, blah, blah. And it came up with open source software to use on my Linux system. Why should you go open source? First off, you're not made of money. If you just want to tinker around with some sort of software, figure out how it works, figure out if it fits your software usage patterns or how your brain works when it comes to musical composition, you're not going to want to drop like hundreds of dollars on a piece of software just to find out that it really doesn't work with how you think. That sucks. Whereas open source software, you can download it, it's completely free, you're not pirating anything, you're not violating any licenses, it's there. And also, you know, the documentation. There's a lot of, you know, pretty good online documentation for all these pieces of software I'm talking about. There's forums where people are discussing how it works. And, you know, if you want to bug the developer on IRC, like if you find a problem with it, you know, it can be pretty easy to get in touch with, say, hey, you know, I found this, get a dialogue going. I don't run Linux, like I said, that doesn't matter. Even though open source software is often associated with Linux, the stuff I'm talking about today is cross-platform. So now with that out of the way, I'm done with the open source evangelism, I promise. Let's talk about how you can make some noise. First, I'm going to talk about just the building blocks in case, you know, some of you haven't made computer music before. Basically, controllers and synthesizers are the two main building blocks that I'm going to be talking about. Now think of a traditional musical instrument. You know, you're standing in front of an old school piano. You push a key, you hold it down for a certain amount of time. You know, you push it hard, it's going to be a sharper sound. You kind of softly touch it, it's going to be a little quieter, a little rounder. You hear a sound. On a computer, you have software that allows you to define that pitch, that time, that articulation, that sound quality, and you hear a sound. And you know, it's kind of nice because with some of these computer software, you can, you know, create a pitch, time, articulation that may not actually be able to happen with, let's say, a real live French horn, and yet associate it with the sound, you know, synthesized French horn sound, and you can make these sounds that you're not going to actually be able to get out of traditional musical instruments. And I know, at least to some people that make computer music, there's a huge allure in that. It's actually really cool that you can make instruments sound like they were never intended to sound like. Now controllers, it's kind of like the keys you push. There are hardware controllers, you know, a keyboard, a drum pad. You can make your own with microcontrollers. You know, at the end of the talk, I'm going to give you my website. These slides are going to be up as soon as I get back on a computer to upload them. You know, I also have another talk that I gave at PenguinCon last year about how to make your own musical instruments using Arduino. It's not as hard as it sounds. If I can do it, anybody can. Really, any hardware that translates your interactions with it into melodic data is going to be useful as a hardware controller. There are also software controllers. The first one I started playing around with was called VMPK, which is the Virtual MIDI Piano Keyboard, I believe that stands for. Basically, it's just a little window on your screen that looks like a piano keyboard, and you know, you can move your mouse and click the keys. That got pretty clunky pretty quickly, and it became not my primary MIDI controller anymore. But it's a pretty good example of a pure software controller. There are keyboards built into other software. You know, I'll have a screenshot of one of the synthesizers that I use sometimes, and it's got a piano keyboard on there. Also, there are programs that generate melodies that fall into that category of controllers. I mean, sequencers, score editors, algorithmic composition, anything that's like, okay, here's a list of notes and MIDI messages to shape that note. That's a controller. I mean, that's a software definition of pushing down the key. Then there's synthesizers, the instruments that you hear. There are hardware examples of synthesizers, you know, commercially available machines with built-in sound banks that you feed information into and it makes the noise. Again, you can make your own with microcontrollers. I touch on that a little bit in, on the talk that I mentioned in my website, the one I gave at PenguinCon last year. Software synthesizers, I'm going to talk about a few of those in this talk. A lot of them, just right out of the box, they have a full range of synthesized instrument sounds. Sometimes it may not have as many, or there might not be one that you want. You can create your own sound by modifying the waveforms. Or a lot of times, you can just Google around, look around. People have made banks of sounds that you can use with existing soft synth frameworks. I love software synthesizers. They're awesome. First thing I'm going to talk about, actually, open source software synthesizers. The first one I ever used, and a really good one to start with if you're kind of learning the ropes on software synthesizers and learning the ropes on music, is called Zinad SubFX. It's kind of a funny name, kind of clunky, but it is a really good software synthesizer to start with. Because to make it make noise, you're not going to have to deal with, plugging it in through any sort of sound server framework. You can open it up from your menu and start tinkering around with it, and it actually makes noise. There's a piano keyboard on the screen, or you can type keys on your keyboard and it will make noise, which is awesome, because I'll just start typing words or start typing phrases, and sometimes certain words or certain phrases will sound really good. I mean, that's a lot of times I ended up doing that. Maybe a year ago or so, we'd have these monthly unusual musical instrument nights at Pumping Station One, which was a hackerspace in Chicago that I belonged to. And sometimes my contribution to the unusual musical instrument night would be just finding sentences or phrases or words that sounded really cool, and typing them over and over again as kind of an ostinato, which is really just a repeating pattern for other people to play their instruments over. It's a lot of fun. Problem is, though, when I started exploring around more with MIDI and making my own MIDI controllers out of Arduinos, I found that when trying to connect it to other things, it was just slightly MIDI non-conforming enough to be a royal pain in the butt, which is why it's not my primary software synthesizer anymore. It is cross-platform. There are official releases for Linux and Windows. There's also a port that the community made for Mac OS X, and there's the website where you can download it. If you do run Ubuntu or some flavor of that, there is an official package manager. It's available through the package manager as well. Apt-get Zinad SubFX, and you'll have it. But you can download it on SourceForge. This is a screenshot, just so you can see the user interface there. At the bottom, you'll see this is a piano keyboard. You can change how many octaves the keyboard has, change the MIDI channel if you have different banks tied, different instruments tied to each channel, how low or how high it goes, 0 and 127, that's the range of numbers assigned to pitches in MIDI. You can click there. If you click that, then it pops open I believe that's my next slide, actually. Yeah, you click there. It pops open different banks. You can drop this down, and there'll be just a list of different banks. I mean, this is only one of the many banks that it comes with by default, which is another reason that Zinad SubFX is a really fun way to get started, just learning the ropes, making music with your computer, because there's just so many sounds that come with it, and a lot of them sound pretty cool. Now, Fluid Synth and QSynth, that's become my default framework for software synthesis at this point. It turns MIDI data into sounds using sound fonts. And sound fonts is a fairly old technology, but it's cool because it's derived from the real sounds that real instruments make, and the goal is to turn that into some kind of digital pattern that your sound card can play. And it used to be a real pain in the butt because you had to make sure that your sound card supported this sound font stuff. But Fluid Synth is a software layer that makes it so that your sound card doesn't have to specifically be made to do sound fonts anymore. If you've got Fluid Synth and you find any kind of sound fonts, sound banks online, you should be able to play them using Fluid Synth. QSynth is just the graphical front end to it. You can also use it to convert sound to raw audio format or WAV file format for either further processing or to, you know, play for your friends. It's nice because I haven't run into any MIDI compliance issues in FluidSynth, QSynth. I've had no problem connecting this to any controller I wanted to. And it's available for either Linux or Windows. This is a picture of, you know, some of the main windows of QSynth. You can see the top. You can mess around with the, you know, with the waveform. You can add some, you know, chorus effects, change the shape of the wave. These are just the sounds that come with, you know, one of the banks that comes with it by default. Again, what's really nice is if you find any kind of, you know, list of, you know, bank of sound font sounds, you can probably run it through FluidSynth and QSynth. One other synthesizer I'm going to talk about is Hydrogen. It's a very specific one, specifically if you want to make drum patterns. And it's a lot of fun, really easy to get the hang of. You can create them, shape them, layer them, track them. It's originally for Linux, but it has been ported to Mac OS X. There used to be a Windows port. It went dormant about 2006, but in the most recent snapshot, there is a Windows port again. So if you run Windows, look for a port of Hydrogen in the near future. What's really nice is this is just what you get when you open the program. So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 beats in a measure. You can, you know, change the gradations within a measure, kick, stick, snare, jazz, hand clap, etc. Wherever you click, that's the beat where that sound is going to show up, and, you know, pretty soon you're going to have an interesting little drum beat going on. Again, it's a lot of fun to play with, and the learning curve in Hydrogen, not very steep. Now that you know of a couple of programs that you can use to make sounds, what are you going to use to make those sounds have some structure? Actually, you know, kind of make some music out of those sounds, flesh out your ideas. First of all, I'm going to talk about sequencers. Now, they're called sequencers because back in the day, that's pretty much all they did. You know, you had this hardware box, it was a grid of 16, and, you know, okay, here, 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 and here, it's going to make this noise. You chain the patterns, it makes longer compositions based on the loops that you've made in the synthesizer, ready to go. Modern times, sequencers are a lot more than that. You know, a lot of programs that we'd call sequencers nowadays are full-featured digital audio workstations. Hardware sequencers still exist. They're not quite as popular anymore just because of the lower cost and larger feature set that it's feasible to get in a software sequencer. Now, the first sequencer I'm going to talk about is very stripped down like the original hardware sequencers. It's called Seq24. I think that's how it's pronounced. I've always seen it written, really never said. But it's a loop-based MIDI sequencer. You can either record loops in real time with a, you know, MIDI keyboard or controller that you have attached, or you can open up a piano roll and, you know, do it note by note and play it back. You can edit the timing, the articulation, and layer the loops together. Like I said, it does a few things, and it does a few things very well. It's nice because you can get it for either Linux or Windows, and, you know, MIDI keyboard, computer keyboard, or mouse. There are several ways you can enter data into there. These are kind of the main windows of Seq24. This is the piano roll display, and, you know, beat number 1, 2, 3, 4 of a 4/4 measure. If you don't necessarily know music jargon, please forgive me if this is basic for any and or all of you. But a 4/4 measure is, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 quarter notes per measure, just a pretty basic meter when it comes to music. And, you know, here you've got, and there's kind of a piano display here, you know, C, D, E, F, G, etc. And you can enter notes here. And then this is just the velocity, or kind of how hard you hit the key. So I have it kind of ebbing and flowing through the course of the measure. And, you know, I've got that, and then I've got another different thing that's layered on top of it. So then when you play this, it would play both of these over each other. It'd play both of the loops. This here is, you know, just you can get the list of all of the loops, and if you double click on this, you'll get this and you can just start screwing around with all of the notes. I entered these just using the mouse, although you can also use a keyboard, your computer keyboard, whatever suits your fancy. Then there are more complex sequencers, and this slide got really screwed up for some reason. They combine looping features with recording, layering, processing features. You know, not only do you enter music note data into it, but you can give them, you know, wave files, MP3 files, depending on, you know, what features your sequencer has, and you use it to process and mess around with sounds. There's a program called Ardor, which is probably the, you know, slickest, most feature-rich of the open source sequencers. You can run it on Linux, FreeBSD, Mac OS X. There's not a Windows port right now. You see some, you know, mumblings in the community about having one, but the main developer of Ardor, not so crazy about it. One interesting thing about Ardor is there's a program I'm going to talk about later, which helps you connect all the programs together called Jack. And since the main developer of Jack and the main developer of Ardor are the same guy, the Ardor and Jack integration is really, really good, unsurprisingly. There's another one called Muse, which is Linux only, and then another one called Rose Garden, which is Linux only. One nice thing about Rose Garden, we'll get some screenshots of all of these in a bit. Rose Garden, unlike Ardor or Muse, also has a score editor feature in it, which is nice if you're like me and you're most comfortable in, you know, the five lines, treble clef, bass clef, quarter notes, half notes sort of realm. The nice thing about computer software is you don't necessarily have to read music to make it do some really cool things, but there are certain programs which are extra special awesome if you do know how to read music. Muse used to have that feature built into it, but it was actually forked off, and now it's a separate program that I'm going to talk about later. This is a screenshot of Ardor, and you know, this has just 14-15 more different loops going on. You can mix them into and out of each other. It's a full-featured digital audio workstation. You can, you know, it deals with not just, you know, the MIDI stuff like the Seek 24 does, although it does deal with it, but you can do full tracked audio work on Ardor. Muse, these are some of the common Muse windows here. This is, you know, as you can see, very similar to the one window, the piano roll display is the term for it, from Seek 24 that I showed you with the different notes and how they're layered together on a graph of the beats of the measure. Here there's a drum display. Hydrogen isn't the only program that allows you to do drum controlling. Muse allows you to do that too. This is the sound mixer for Muse. And then this is the loop display, so you can see the different loops that you have going and, you know, how they fit together, which one's going to be playing at any particular time beat of the measure. Rose Garden, these are a couple of screenshots of Rose Garden. This is, again, kind of like that last window that I pointed at in Muse, where you see the different things that are playing all over each other at any given point in time in your composition. This is the piano roll display, the, you know, note editor. This is another note editor. This is what I was talking about with the, you know, it's really light, you can't really see it, but it does have, you know, the five lines. Like, this is the normal musical staff. So if you're more comfortable using that than a piano roll display, you can. And then this is the drum interface. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about score editors. Like I said, Rose Garden has a score editor feature of it, but there are a couple that I want to touch on that are dedicated score editors, if that's your thing. I love score editors. Like I said, I'm, you know, unlike a lot of computer music people, I am most comfortable in the, you know, five lines to a staff sort of environment. And what's nice about those is not only does it create formatted score files that you can, you know, print out and give to your friends to perform, or print out and give to your choir to sing, or whatever. But you can, they do allow you to save it as, you know, MIDI files, more common portable files. So then you can put it into one of the, you know, into a, like a sequencer or digital audio workstation, or really any other program that'll let you tinker around with MIDI and tinker around with it in that environment too. It's useful for composing your own music, and it's also useful for learning and playing existing music. I mean, I would never learn all of my pieces for choir if it weren't for the fact that when I get my piece of music, I sit down, I type it into my score editor, and then I have a track that I can, put on my iPod after a little bit of processing, which again, I'll get to later to how to get to that point. And, I can listen to it on the bus or listen to it, when I'm at work, and I learn my songs that way. Denimo, that's come a lot in the last few years. I started using it, back in 2008, and it was really clunky and it buggy. I didn't like it very much, and I got back to it, within the last year or so. It's made a lot of progress, and it's nice because the keyboard configuration is so configurable that it's like, oh, it would make sense for me to hit these keys for a, quarter note A to show up. I configure it that way, and it's become almost as typing a song into Denimo has become almost as intuitive as typing text into a word processor is for me, just because I've configured the keyboard shortcuts to what makes sense in my head and use them so much that it's just like regular typing. Denimo is a graphical front end to an open source score engraver framework called LilyPond, and a score engraver is basically something that allows you to print out scores that look nice and pretty, like you'd find in a music book or something. You can save it as a score. Denimo has its own XML format, just markup that Denimo understands. Or you can save it as MIDI, which is nice because then it's portable to other applications. Save it as an image if you want a picture of your composition to come up on your website or whatever. It runs on Linux, runs on Mac, runs on Windows, and I think Denimo is pretty darn awesome. This is a picture of just what the interface looks like with a piece that I'm in the middle of working on right now, actually. And I haven't written any lyrics for it, but there's a way you can put lyrics under the notes. You can enter it with a mouse, click on a half note and then click on that to make it a B flat. But then there's also keyboard shortcuts, like I said. You can change the key signatures, the time signature, the clef, the notes, and like I said, it's score editors, or if you're comfortable with the traditional music notes interface, they're fabulous. One other I'll bring up is MuseScore. It was part of the Muse sequencer. They decided that, that was trying to make that one program do too much, so it was forked off. It's now its own project, a dedicated score editor. You can use the mouse, keyboard, MIDI controller to enter it. What's nice with Muse is if you really like Fluid Synth, it is pretty well integrated with Fluid Synth, so it's something to look at there. You can save score form, MIDI form, PDFs. As far as I know, you can't make a PDF on Denimo, so if being able to save your music as a PDF is important to you, MuseScore is one that you should consider. And unlike the Muse sequencer, which is just available for Linux, the Muse Score has been made for Linux, Mac, or Windows. And this is the same piece that I showed you in Denimo just a few minutes ago in Muse. The visual interface in Muse Score is, I think, it is a little prettier, a little slicker. You can click here, choose the length of the note, choose, flats and sharps and double sharps and double flats, and that's just what the user interface looks like on MuseScore. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about algorithmic composition. If you like math, algorithmic composition is a lot of fun. It doesn't derive music from a traditionally written out score or a set of looped tracks like the score frameworks or the sequencers I'm talking about. Instead, it uses mathematical methods and functions to define patterns. You can map list elements to musical events. If you want things to be kind of random, you can use, different order Markov chains to either make things, completely random or make them, depend on the last event or last two events or something. You can go crazy just writing out these complicated patterns of what maps to what. I'll start trying to write out some code for algorithmic composition, and I feel like I've been writing code all day, and yet I still haven't fleshed out, all the functions or all the sequences of events. It's a lot of fun, and it gets really addictive. the main open source algorithmic music platform. It's Common Music and Grace. Common Music is kind of the back end, the composition framework, and then Grace is the graphical IDE, integrated development environment for Common Music. And what's really cool about Common Music is you have several choices for your composition environment, you know, depending on how deep you want to get into the coding, or really if you want to code at all. There's a programming language called SAL, which is suitable for beginners, and it's specific to Common Music. It's really easy to get the hang of if you've done any kind of programming whatsoever, and it's extremely full-featured. My dirty little secret is, that's the language that I use when I'm doing algorithmic composition. If you want things to be, if you want something more complex, more full-featured, or if you're really into functional programming, you can also program Common Music in Scheme, and very well documented, there are a set of Scheme functions that are specific to Common Music. SAL, by the way, is very well documented as well on the Common Music website. Then there's also a graph interface, which I will have a screenshot of later, but if you kind of want to draw a picture or draw out a graph or plot out points, you can use the graph interface to draw pretty pictures, or not so pretty as the case may be, map that stuff out to musical events to your liking, and come out with this really chaotic sounding stuff. That's a lot of fun too. Again, it offers a variety of ways to save music files, MIDI files, which are nice if you plan on screwing around with it in some other program, SAL code or Scheme code, so you can just go back and edit the source code and see how your new source code sounds. So you can save your graphs in XML, you can save them in GNU Merrick spreadsheet format, that's just it's an open source spreadsheet program. You can save one composition in any or all of these formats. There are official releases for Linux, Mac OS X, and Windows, and the website is commonmusic.sourceforge.net. Like I said, there's a lot of documentation on there. There are a couple of books that have been published, but it changes and develops faster than the book, so I suggest going on there and reading through the documentation on the SourceForge website. This is a screenshot. This is just kind of the main Grace window that pops up, and if there are any kind of errors or changes to it, it'll pop up here, sort of like your terminal, if you will. This is a code window for the integrated development environment, and then a bit of just kind of the beginning of a SAL program that I was writing at the time. This is a picture of the graph interface. And you can set the different values here on the axes and make your graph. Obviously, I just made this really chaotic, and when I played it out, it was kind of like a kid just banging on a piano for a second or two, has no idea what they're doing, they just want to bang on it and make it as loud as possible. Graph music doesn't necessarily have to be like that, but that entertains me, not gonna lie. Now, I've talked about all these things that you can use to make noises, I've talked about all these things that you can use to define pitches, but how do you connect them together? I was talking about just now the Common Music. You can use that to define, the note lengths and the note patterns and the note shapes, but, if you just open up Common Music, write some code, and click play, you're not going to hear a thing. Common Music doesn't have a synthesizer in it, which means there's going to be nothing to actually make the notes. So basically the question is, do you know Jack? Jack is the Jack Audio Connection Kit, because open source software loves recursive acronyms. It sees your synthesizers, it sees your controllers, you can even have it configured to see other computers on a network. You can work it over the network, and it gets them talking to each other. Technically, Jack is the name of the API. QJack Control is a pretty easy to manage graphical front end to Jack. These programs can run on Linux, Mac OS X, or Windows. This is, I've got here, this is just the information, the Jack messages. This is kind of the control panel to start and stop. This is a QSynth window. It's the same thing that I showed before, but I kind of, where the real action is here, and I'll have another screenshot of work in here. You got here your your output ports and your input ports, I don't have anything connected. There aren't any lines there. And this is kind of like your patch bay. If you don't have anything plugged into anything else, nothing's going to happen. So you can see I've got my keyboard plugged into my computer. I've got FluidSynth running. But if I press a key on the keyboard and my jack window looks like this, I'm not going to hear anything. However, if I click on this, click on that, and then use the connect button, it's going to look like this. It's going to connect, and now if I hit any of my keys, my MIDI keyboard is plugged into FluidSynth, and whatever note, whatever tone that I have set up to use on FluidSynth, whatever instrument I have, it's going to sound like that, and I can play my keyboard, and I can listen to my music, and things are set up. And, you know, that's pretty much scratching the surface on what to do with Jack, but it's the one major functionality for Jack that I go to again and again and again. It's one thing with these music softwares that I honestly find really maddening is a lot of them seem to try to do way too much at once. Like, you know, I was talking about the sequencers that also are these full-featured digital audio workstations. They're not my favorite because I think they try to do too much. Maybe I'm kind of a Luddite, but I like one program that's really good at doing like one or two things. And, you know, Jack can do a whole bunch of things, and he's, you know, any specific program can do a whole bunch of things. I like having the building blocks, and I like Jack being my glue that holds together these different building blocks that I have running on my system. Now, you know, we've talked about how, you know, what kinds of things will make the noises, we've talked about how to build and shape the noises, and we've talked about how to connect the synthesizers to the controllers. Now, what do you want to do if you have audio files to mess around with? Or if you want to share your music with your friend, you know, Jack random non-composer, you need something to process it. You know, like I said, MIDI's great if you're composing, if you're making the music, but you're not gonna, you know, your friend across the hallway at work or whatever, if you want to share some of your music with them, you're not going to say, oh, here's a MIDI file. You're going to, you know, you got to open this program and open this program and connect this with Jack and blah, blah, blah. You're going to end up rehashing everything that I'm talking about today, and they're probably going to be like, I'm not going to go through this much trouble to play this. You're going to want to give it someone something they can play on their iPod. These Timidity and Lame are some useful frameworks that are open source software. They're also, them themselves are command line tools, so I don't have any like pretty screenshots. Timidity can also function as a MIDI synthesizer, but what I find it most useful for is if I have a MIDI program and I want to save it as like a WAV file, I can use Timidity and, you know, one command, boom, it's changed. And, you know, it officially runs on Linux and Windows. You can also port it to Mac. It's also been ported to Mac OS X. And then there's LAME. LAME is, well, another recursive acronym that open source people love so much. LAME ain't an MP3 encoder, except for the fact that it is an MP3 encoder. It's distributed as source due to file format restrictions. So even though the software for LAME is open source, MP3 as a format is not, which sucks. Problem is, it's the format that everybody uses, so it's kind of good to know how to convert stuff. You can also interface with other applications as a plugin, which I'll get to in a moment. It compiles on Linux, Mac, OS X, and Windows, and, you know, if you have a WAV file and you have LAME, you can just type into a terminal LAME blah, where blah is your WAV file, and congratulations, you now have an MP3 file of that WAV file. And, you know, people won't look at you funny if you send them the file in that format. Audio processing software. You know, a lot of the stuff that I was talking about allows you to, you know, configure specific notes. But also, what's kind of fun and what a lot of computer musicians also like to do is mess around with stuff that's already in, you know, an audio track. Like, turn that into loops or make it sound different, put it through filters. A lot of the full sequencers, you can do a lot of that. Ardor, Muse, and Rose Garden all have audio processing in addition to MIDI. Another one that I just want to bring up as well is Audacity. That's my favorite dedicated audio processing software, I think, because it, you know, it specifically focuses on that. It does support MP3. There is a lame plugin for Audacity. You don't even have to compile it. And there are official releases for Linux, Mac OS X, and Windows. This is, you know, just a pretty basic Audacity. You've got your track here, you know, 1, 2. If you had more than 2 tracks or more than just a left and a right, they'd be down here. You can select different portions of it, you know, put effects on it, make it quieter, make it louder, you know, zoom in, change the waveforms. It's pretty cool. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about Ubuntu Studio. You know, after I've gone through all of these programs, you know, rapid fire, one after one after one, it's like, oh, hold it, catch my breath. How am I going to remember all of this stuff? Well, first, like I said, I'm putting my slides online, but if you just want to have all of it at your fingertips without having to go to every website and download every single program that I'm talking about, just look for Ubuntu Studio. It's an official derivative of Ubuntu Linux, and it contains multimedia packages. It's actually got stuff for audio work, video work, and graphics work, although obviously the video and the graphics are a little beyond the scope of this particular presentation. But if you want to play around with open source video or graphics software, Ubuntu Studio can be a good place to start. It contains every program that I've talked about here except for Rose Garden. But if you want to play around with Rose Garden, that's really easy to get. You know, there is an official Ubuntu package for that. It just, for some reason, which I've never quite understood, doesn't come with Ubuntu Studio. And it's a good platform to be in experimenting for several reasons. If you've never used Linux before in your life, Ubuntu is still pretty easy to get the hang of. You know, the graphical environment is, you know, pretty easy to figure out. If you're used to running, you know, Windows or Mac, you know, you've still got like a button that drops down the menu, gives you the applications, and, you know, it's a pretty low learning curve even if you're new to Linux. It can be run as a live CD, which means, you know, you put the CD in, you boot, you tell your computer to boot from the CD, and, you know, that's running as your operating system. And, you know, you can run that without touching, modifying any of the files or the operating system that you already have running on your computer. So you can just have it as a, you know, dedicated music environment without eating up any of your precious hard drive space or trying to figure out, you know, oh God, I'm scared to partition my hard drive, I can't dual boot, which was, you know, me as until about 2008, I was so scared to do anything that involved messing around with my hard drive because I was afraid I was going to fry it. And also, it's pre-configured for multimedia work. Sometimes getting, you know, Jack up and running to start with, or getting any of these programs up and running to start with, it can be a pain in the butt because you have to make sure that, you know, your user is configured in the audio group, and, you know, not that hard if you've been using Linux for a while, but if you haven't, it can be a little daunting, a little scary if your focus is on, okay, I just want this to make loud, obnoxious noises. So it's pre-configured. You don't have to mess around with any of that junk if you're just booting from Ubuntu Studio, and you can focus on the making music as opposed to the how in the world do I configure Linux. That's it. I've, you know, kind of gone through the basic, you know, building blocks of computer music, programs that you can use that are open source. Have a question? Yeah. I've never actually heard of, well, since he didn't have the microphone, I'm going to kind of, you know, digest his question. His question is basically, it's hard to find the right sound. Do I know of any kinds of programs that will randomly spin the dials and then you can stop, go back, and find, you know, what it is that made that really cool sound that you want to keep using? I don't know of any programs that do that. As far as trying to find out sounds, I mean, I do trial and error. You know, I'll start with sounds that I already have in banks and then start twisting the dials myself, and sometimes that sounds cool and sometimes it doesn't. I'd have to look around for that and get back to you because I don't actually know of a synthesizer randomization program. It should. If it doesn't, it should.
It
Yes. It depends on my mood, really. I mean, you know, most of the composition stuff that I like to do, my favorite things to do, a lot of my workflow involves, okay, I've got this melody in my head, and since I'm my personal workflow definitely focuses on, you know, more traditional musical notation, I'll plug my keyboard in, hook it into usually QSynth Fluid Synth nowadays, used to be Zenad Sub FX, but nowadays it's, you know, QSynth Fluid Synth. I'll start playing around, make sure that I've got, you know, the notes for the line that's ringing in my head, sketch that out, and then I will, you know, write it out in a score framework editor, for me usually Denemo, but I'll write it out in a score editor, and then, you know, try to write harmonies for it. You know, it's very, My workflow, at least at that stage, is very similar to sitting down at the computer equivalent of sitting down at the piano with a piece of staff paper and kind of writing out, playing through it. Once I've done that, once I've written it out and I've fleshed out the idea, fleshed out how I want it harmonized, then, you know, if it's something that is intended for, you know, live performance or for singing, then I don't really do a whole lot with, you know, messing around with the synthesizer sound. I'll probably save like an MP3 of it. Save it as a MIDI file, put it through Timidity, and then put it through LAME as an MP3. Maybe print out, you know, an image file of the score if I want to share it with my friends, and, you know, maybe try and have them sing it. If it's, you know, my other kind of favorite thing to do is algorithmic composition. That's the workflow for that is very much like, you know, sitting down trying to write a piece of code. You know, it's there, I'm, you know, defining these functions. Oh, that doesn't really, you know, loop around or sound the way I quite want it to. Oh, you know, these notes aren't quite what I want them to be. And then that's really not intended to be performed by anything other than a computer. So then there's a little bit of what I was mentioning with his question, kind of, okay, what kind of notes do I want this to sound? Trial, error, what sorts of, you know, ranges of, you know, instruments or wave shapes do I want this code to even generate? So it really depends on the type of music that I'm trying to write, my workflow. It's scatterbrained and all over the place, just like me. Any other questions? Yes? You know, I know that there was a day when I didn't know what a measure, a quarter note or whatever was. You know, my parents had like the, you know, Methodist hymnal sitting on the bookshelf, and I'd flip through. It's like, what are these funny looking things that I can't read? Well, no, and then, you know, once I was like 7 or 8 and taught myself how to read music, it's like, oh, that's what it is. But before that, I'm like, what? So yeah, music notation, just like any other particular jargon, can be a little weird. Yes? When I try to record my voice into a computer, that's generally what I use Audacity, that's one of the things I like to use Audacity for. Because not only is it, you know, is it really good at, you know, processing and messing around with sound that already exists. I mean, if I'm singing or if I want even just, you know, talking, speech recorded, when I want to record something, I usually use Audacity. Thank you all very much for coming.